Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
Today, we are getting into something that is, I think, maybe the most celebrated and most failed idea in work today. Collaboration.
Oh,
you see it on the walls. It's in every mission statement. Every leader talks about it.
It's the goal, right? It's this high aspiration. Everyone agrees that, you know, a group of smart people is better than one smart person. It leads to better solutions. You learn faster as a company, all of that.
Right. And yet, the actual experience of it can be just painful. It turns into these endless meetings, or you have competing agendas, or my favorite, everyone just nods and then goes off and does what they were going to do anyway.
The way we've always done it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that gap, that huge gap between the dream and the reality, that's what we want to understand.
And that's really the mission for this deep dive. We're looking at sources that argue the reason it's so frustrating isn't because we're bad people or we're not smart enough. It's because collaboration is fundamentally unnatural for us. Yeah. It goes against our basic human wiring. Our instincts, I mean, they are almost perfectly designed to make us terrible at this, so we have to actively, consciously override them.
Okay, that's a huge idea, so let's unpack that.
Mm.
We're going to dive into the four big conflicts, starting with, you know, basic survival. And then we'll get into the solution, the five specific disciplines you need to make this actually work. Okay, so let's start with that base layer you mentioned. Our sources really stress this point, that our nervous system evolved for one thing first and foremost, to protect ourselves.
Right. Self-protection.
You hear a noise in the tall grass, you don't form a committee, you run.
That's conflict number one right there. Survival first, collaboration second. The saber-toothed tiger is gone, but the wiring is absolutely still there. And in the office, that physical threat, it's been replaced by social risk.
And social risk is the big killer of psychological safety.
It's the number one enemy.
So break that down. What does social risk look like in a meeting?
Well, it's not about being eaten, but your brain kind of reacts the same way. It's the fear of losing status. It's those little questions that pop into your head, like, if I pitch this idea, is everyone going to think I'm an idiot?
Or if I ask a question to clarify, will they think I wasn't paying attention, that I'm incompetent?
Exactly. And the second that fear kicks in, your brain just, it changes modes.
The shutters come down.
They do. When your brain senses risk, it doesn't get curious, it gets protective. Your world narrows. And instead of connecting with the group's goal, you retreat. You start defending your own turf, your own idea.
So just to be clear, collaboration demands being open, being a little bit vulnerable, being willing to be wrong.
All things that your survival instinct screams at you not to do. So it's always intentional work. You are literally fighting your own evolution.
Wow. That just makes suggesting a new idea in a tense meeting feel kind of heroic.
It is.
So if that's about basic safety, the second conflict is all about the ego. Mm. This tension between wanting to belong and wanting to be right.
Yeah, this is such a core human thing. We have this deep, deep craving to belong, to be part of the team, the tribe. But at the same time, we desperately want to be seen as an individual.
To be valued for our contribution.
For our idea. We want our idea to be the one that wins.
And the sources talk about this paradox you have to hold in your head to make collaboration work. It's like you have to believe two truths at once. The first one is, my idea is valuable. I worked hard on it.
Right. And you should be proud of it. But the second truth, which is so much harder when you're in a debate, is, your idea might make mine better.
Or even harder. Your idea might just be the better idea.
And that, to the ego, feels like losing. It feels like a threat.
So the discipline is what? To slow down.
It's to slow down, stay curious, and actually question your own assumptions. You have to temporarily suspend that powerful, visceral need to win the argument.
Because if you don't, you just end up defending your position.
Always. You'll never get to that third better idea, the one that neither of you walked into the room with. And that discovery is what real collaboration is about. But it requires admitting you didn't have the perfect answer to begin with.
Okay, so we've got survival and ego, the internal battles. Now let's talk about the operational ones. And conflict number three is probably the one every single person listening feels every single day.
Hmm.
Efficiency versus effectiveness.
Oh, this is the big one. It's the great excuse for not collaborating, because we have to just admit it. Real collaboration is slow.
In the short term.
In the short term, absolutely. It takes time. It takes patience. You need meetings to get people aligned. It takes a lot of energy.
But when the pressure is on, you've got a deadline, the budget's been cut, the first instinct from management is, okay, everyone, just go to your corners and get it done.
Go it alone, because it feels faster.
It does. It absolutely feels faster.
You skip the messy conversation. You avoid the debate. But this is the classic trap. Organizations pay a massive long-term price for that feeling of short-term speed.
What does that price look like?
It looks like rework. It looks like integration failing at the last minute. It's internal conflict because two teams built things that don't fit together. It's because people fail, not because they aren't smart, but because they aren't aligned.
They don't have a shared understanding of the problem.
Exactly. And that inefficient conversation you skipped at the beginning, that's the one that builds the shared understanding. You pay for it now, or you pay for it 10 times over later.
I love that distinction. It really forces you to step back and ask that question. I think it was Thomas Huxley who said, "It is not who is right, but what is right that is of importance."
Yes. And getting to what is right is the goal, not just doing something fast.
Which is a perfect lead-in to conflict four. We are wired to trust people who are like us, but innovation only comes from people who are different.
Yeah, the comfort of sameness. As humans, we're pattern recognizers. It's just easier. It takes less mental energy to work with people who think like you do.
It's comfortable. It's predictable.
And it is the enemy of breakthrough ideas. Because if you get a bunch of people who think the same way in a room, you know what you get.
The same ideas you started with.
You get homogeneous, incremental results. True innovation. It comes from diversity. Diversity of background, of training, of lived experience. But when you put those different perspectives together, they don't just magically harmonize.
No, they create friction. They rub up against each other.
And most people see that friction and they think, oh no, this is failing. Our team is broken.
There's too much conflict.
Right. But the sources reframe this so well that friction isn't a sign of failure. It's a sign the system is generating heat. And heat is what forges things. Heat creates progress.
So the goal isn't to get rid of the tension.
No, the goal is to get good at navigating it. High-performing teams know that if everyone agrees instantly, someone in that room is redundant. They embrace that tension because they're focused on learning together, not on one person winning the argument.
Okay, so let's just recap the challenge here. Our instincts, our human nature, push us towards certainty, going fast, protecting our ego, and sticking with what's familiar.
Right.
And collaboration asks for the exact opposite. It asks for uncertainty, slowing down, humility, and seeking out difference. That gulf is why it fails.
That's the whole thing right there. And it leads to a really critical insight. Collaboration is not a soft skill. It's not a personality trait. It's a discipline.
You can't just send people to a workshop and expect it to stick.
No. If it's not our default setting, it has to be operationalized. It has to be built into the way you work with specific rituals and processes.
Okay, so let's get practical. The sources lay out five practices to do this. What's number one?
Number one, deliberate psychological safety. And the key is defining safety not as the absence of fear or disagreement,
but as the presence of trust.
Exactly. The trust that you can ask a dumb question, that you can admit you made a mistake, or you can challenge an idea without it being career limiting.
And that has to come from the top. Leaders have to model that.
They have to. Or the survival instinct will always win. Okay, so that's the foundation. Number two, normalize dissent.
So you're not just tolerating disagreement, you're actively encouraging it.
You're expecting it. It's about building the skill of productive conflict. You create ground rules so you can separate the idea from the person. You can debate passionately about the what without making it personal about the who.
I like that. Okay, practice three seems to directly address the efficiency problem we talked about.
It does. It's prioritize learning speed over immediate execution speed.
A huge mental shift.
Massive. It means you intentionally invest the time up front to get that shared understanding. There's a great analogy in the source material. You might think you're saving time by not reading the instructions to build the car.
But you're going to spend days taking it apart later when you realize the engine is in backward.
That's it, exactly. That upfront slow learning time prevents massive amounts of rework later on.
Makes sense. Okay, practice four gets at the ego.
Yep.
Reward collaboration. People do what they're rewarded for. It's that simple. If your company only celebrates the individual hero who stayed up all night to finish a project alone,
then that's what everyone will try to do.
Of course. So you have to build systems, performance reviews, bonuses, public praise that explicitly reward the things that lead to good collaboration. Things like listening, integrating ideas, and yes, constructive dissent.
Okay, and the last one brings it all together. Practice five. Build systems and rituals.
This is how you make it a habit. If it's not our first instinct, we have to make it a reflex through structure.
Give me an example.
It could be a mandatory debrief after every project milestone, Or maybe it's a rule that no major decision can be made until at least three different departments have weighed in. These things feel clunky at first, but when they become predictable rituals, they lower the cognitive load. It just becomes the way we work. #headtagoutro.
You know, at the end of the day, what the sources are really telling us is that the world is just getting more and more complex. And no single person, I don't care how brilliant they are, can solve the kinds of problems we're facing alone. The future belongs to organizations that can harness collective intelligence.
So this human nature stuff, it's not a roadblock. It's just the starting line. It's the map that shows you where the difficult terrain is going to be.
It's the map. It's not an excuse to avoid the journey. And that really leads to the final thought we want to leave you with. Real, true collaboration, it requires a huge amount of humility.
The humility to do what?
The humility to genuinely believe that someone else on your team holds a piece of the puzzle that you, with all your expertise, simply don't have.
That's a powerful idea. So here's something to mull over. Thinking about that idea that true collaboration is inefficient in the short term, how could you restructure just one of your projects this week to intentionally prioritize learning speed? To prioritize that shared understanding, even if it adds one extra meeting or one extra day to the timeline. Ask yourself, what future pain, what long-term rework might that one slow day prevent? That's something to think about.